B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, it's 4 o'clock hour. Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5. The Fanatic 4 o'clock hour is brought to you by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise. Check them out online at LandisBC.com. All right, we're for the last couple of days. Our favorite NBC Sports Philadelphia baseball people took a road trip together and finally made it down to spring training. Man, it covers the Phillies for NBC Sports Philly and his compadre, Ricky Bitalico. But let's welcome in the great Jim Salisbury. He joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Jim, you survived the trip.
Sure did. Yeah, we made it. Ricky did a great job, the wheel man. He's very aggressive, but he gets the job done, man. He got us here.
So wait, he was the wheel man?
He was the wheel man the whole way. He's that real type A personality. He wanted to jump behind the wheel, and he did such a good job, and we just kind of just rode with it, man. You know, he looked up, and he was barreling through the rain and the wind. We hit so much different kinds of weather. It was amazing. We hit heavy, heavy rain in, like, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. We hit big wind in Virginia to the point where it actually blew over an 18-wheeler. And we had to go way around and take a big old detour. And then in South Carolina and Georgia, we actually hit pretty near blizzard conditions in North Georgia. It was really freaky. And then we ended up in the sun in 80 degrees.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's quite an adventure. I don't know if I could sit in a passenger seat when all that's going on with crazy Ricky at the wheel. You are to be commended.
Yeah, well... like I said, he had it under control. He did a really good job getting us here. We had Spencer McCurcher with us, who's one of our videographers, producers. Guy's a real artist, and he was in the back seat editing videos and
wow.
Getting them up, and the guys in the office were getting them up. So really, you know, it was a lot of fun. We stopped in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where Ricky played minor league ball, and we saw a 95-year-old minor league stadium that I had heard a lot about over the years. I remember talking to Darren Dalton about it because it was 370 to center field. You know, small, but it's a high school park. Now, really, that was really interesting. And then we went to Atlanta where Ricky made his major league debut in Fulton County Stadium. I actually covered the game. And now they have a monument to Hank Aaron sort of out in the parking lot. We reminisced a little bit there. It's right next to where Turner Field
is. Yeah, so it is a parking lot now.
Yeah, but you know, they had the outline of the mound and the bases and stuff like that. So we reminisced there. And then we went to Zach Wheeler's high school, which is about 30 miles north of Atlanta. And his high school coach gave us a great tour of the facilities at his high school. Really nice high school program, beautiful field and clubhouse. I mean, it's just amazing, the facility for a high school team. But so, you know, that was all a lot of fun, and then we had a lot of laughs along the way as well.
Well, let's talk about that quickly, and then I want to get to your Wawa stop, because eventually you found the oasis in the desert. So like, I'm cute. Like, when two dudes are in a car, very rarely do they have the same musical tastes. So, like, right. Who had control of the box?
It's funny. We had the radio on for a while, and then I had control of it for a while. We played some U2. Actually, cranked up some Psychedelic Furs for a while. That was fun.
Psychedelic Furs.
Showing my age, but you know, we actually more or less we did a, you know, had a lot of laughs, and
so it was conversational.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like like uncomfortable silence.
Oh, no, we laughed the whole way down. I go way back with Ricky Paul. We, you know, I covered him when he was a player. I remember him on the way up. You know, I first heard of Ricky Bitalico. The year I was moving to Philly, like 93 or 94, I was, you know, I'm from New England, and, you know, I read the Boston Globe, religiously every day, and Ricky being from New England, I remember Peter Gammons writing a story about Ricky in, like 1993 or 1992, and, so I had, you know, heard of him before then, and I actually remember the day he showed up in the Phillies clubhouse. In Atlanta, when he got his big league call up in July of 1994. And I remember Fergusi really liked him.
He said he had good face.
He had good face.
Yeah.
That was the famous quote.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the analytics age, that expression makes modern day executives cringe, but I actually believe in it because I'm an intangibles guy, and Ricky always had good ones.
All right, so you finally, I was talking to Jim Salisbury, covers the Phillies. We'll get to the Phillies in a second. One of the pieces is that you find the Wawa, and you went, well, actually, you had a couple pit stops at Wawa, but where did you grab the microphone and start taking orders?
Actually, I did not do that. We started off in Delaware County at the original Wawa. It's been replaced, but it's the site of the original. And we gassed up there in Delaware County. And then we went to National Stadium, and we did a little report, like a video on the Nationals. Had some fun doing that. And then we went to lunch at a Wawa right in downtown D.C. And it was a beautiful Wawa. It was pretty new. And Ricky actually donned an apron, went behind the counter.
Oh, it was Ricky that did it. Okay.
Yeah, he started making some sandwiches. He made my sandwich. Did a good job, too. And so he was, he was kind of the star of the show, making hoagies for people. And
they let him make hoagies.
Well, they let him make mine, so I survived.
Okay. Well, that was nice of him, actually.
Yeah. And then we hit a couple in like Virginia, and then we had a pause for a while, and we cranked up again at a Wawa in Ocala, and. There were, you know, it was kind of, you know, I didn't really, they have 250 Wawas in Florida.
Well, yeah, I know they had expanded big time down there, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they
want to knock sheets out of the ballpark in this world.
We drove by a sheet, yep, and we gave it the Bronx cheer.
All right, so yeah, certainly. You have arrived. Yeah, they're not an advertiser here, are they? No. So you arrive in Clearwater, and now this is the anticipation for this week, obviously, pitchers and catchers. I don't know. How do you feel about this team, like, right now, right? Because last year was a different vibe. You know, the Harper thing energized things, and people were saying, well, this team can do something because offensively they're this. Right now, how do you feel about them?
Believe it or not, I think they're better. I think they're better for a number of reasons, and I think it'll show in the win-loss column. That said, they still look like a third or fourth place team coming in because I think the two teams above them, Washington and the Braves, are, you know, superior. You know, the Nationals with that starting pitching, the Braves with that very powerful lineup. But I do think Wheeler and Gregorius make them better. I think Joe Girardi makes them better. I think potentially Brian Price, the pitching coach, will make them better. I think full spring training is going to help Harper. Realmuto is going to be a year more, adjusted to a new scene. So I actually, they won 81 games last year. I can see them getting to 85, 86, maybe push 87. But, you know, that's incumbent on everybody has to be better, you know, from Nola and Zach Wheeler. Harper's got to be better. Realmuto's got to be better. They're going to give the team, you know, they had Harper great second half. Realmuto, you know, they can both put together six good months. You're relying on guys to get better. Maybe a career year here or there, but there has been this little letdown the last couple months because they did their work early, and they still have holes in the pitching staff. We all thought they were going to get two pitchers. They only got one starting pitcher. So there are still holes. They're relying on some of the same old cast of characters, but I actually think they're going to be a little bit better this year. And if they get, you know, if there's underperformance on other teams and if there's career years here, They might surprise a few people. There's not as much buzz coming into this camp because, I mean, shoot, last year Realmuto shows up 2 days before camp while they're, you know, in the thick of the hunt for Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. They end up with Harper. So, I mean, last spring training was just, there was a real euphoria and a real buzz. There is not that. Like I said, they did their work early, and a lot of folks think they should have done more, and they probably should have done more. But that, all that said, I'm eager to see how things happen, and I think Joe Girardi is going to make a difference. I really do.
All right, two last questions that are connected. One is, why do you think they're still going down the Eflin Velasquez Pivetta route? And that connects to this question. Why are they so deadly afraid of the luxury tax?
Well, I think they're not I think they would exceed the luxury tax for the right opportunity, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if this season they end up over that at some point. Now, if they're not in it, they're going to probably try to furiously get under it at the end. But I think they're so close to it, they may end up over it. I think, you know, you just look around baseball. I mean, the Red Sox just made this, you know, monumental trade to get under it. The Dodgers and the Yankees spent the last couple of years getting under it so they could, you know, do, you know, the Yankees case, do big business with Gerrit Cole this year. The penalties are not severe the first year. It's those times when you accumulate, when you're a second, third, and fourth offender, when you start losing draft picks and the money compounds. And I just think they don't want to go over it until they feel like they have a team that can really do something in October. And if they feel like they're there in July, maybe they'll do something. So those are questions that, you know, John Middleton can only answer, because, yeah, I think the front office would probably love to continue to go out there and get more pieces and improve this thing and go over the luxury tax. But ultimately, you know, that's an ownership call. As far as those other guys, you know, Eflin to me is a no-brainer. You stick with him. He made strides last year. His peak performances have been really good. He's had some real low points, but when he's good, he's awfully good. And I think he found something late last year when he kind of went back to featuring the sinker, getting, you know, early contact, early outs, instead of trying to ride that fourth seamer up like they wanted him to with the previous regime. So I think he really was, he found something last year. And I look for improvement from him this year. And the other two, yeah, I know people are getting tired of the other two, but the reason they haven't given up on them is because though, you know, they're getting more expensive. Velasquez, Casey's getting more expensive. They're still not. They're not killing your payroll, and you bank on the talent. The talent is such that you bank on it, and you bank on it, and you hope that one day it clicks. But I think they're kind of running out of one days. One of those guys is going to be your fifth starter, and one of those guys is probably going to go to the bullpen. And if, like I was talking about, you need surprise performances to step up. If one of those guys can click in either one of those roles, they're going to help you improve their team. But the reason they stick with him is because the talent is so good. They have a new pitching coach. I would think those guys are kind of project one and 1A for him. But the clock is definitely ticking. It's ticking on a lot of people here, and it's ticking on those two people big time.
All right, last thing is, give me one guy, as you look in your crystal ball, one guy that's going to stand up and be the surprise of camp and carry that into the season.
The surprise of camp.
Mm-hmm. Who's your hunch? That we don't expect.
Boy, that's a good question. Maybe, you know, I mean, they brought in Francisco Liriano. I think he can help them in the bullpen, left-hander, but that's not a sexy name. Another one that's not a real sexy thing because we've been waiting for him forever, but Roman Quinn, if he's healthy and he comes in here and lights it up in spring training, that's going to be a very interesting call who they play in center field. I know who I would play in center field. I'd play him. You know, Bryce Harper, this guy, there's no break-in period for him. He can come in and have a big camp, but he's not also not a surprise name. There's a few relievers with big arms. I would suspect that Spencer Howard will probably get a few outings down here, and he'll be fun to watch. He'll go to AAA, and Bohm will go to AAA. Sir Anthony Dominguez will kind of probably go easy with him a little bit at first, but he needs to be healthy. If he's healthy, he's like a pickup in the bullpen, but I haven't given you that one guy.
That's all right, no, because there probably isn't one guy, but, you know, these are interesting names you're throwing out.
Yeah, you know, I think Roman Quinn might light it up this spring.
Okay.
But because, you know, they're talking about Hazley being the kind of the guy to beat, kind of number one on the depth chart. It makes a lot of sense. He was somebody this front office drafted. They got a kind of a lot of stock in him. He's the type of player they like. He works talent. He sees pitches. But when Roman Quinn is healthy, he's electric. And we were just seeing it last year when he got hurt. He got hurt in that Cubs series when Harper hit that home run when Charlie came back. And he just was starting to get some confidence and play well, and then something popped again, and he had that groin tear. But he's always going to fight that battle. But if he could ever put together a couple healthy years, I think he could be a Kenny Lofton type player. But we'll see. So I know he wants to play more, and I know he's healthy, and I know he knows they're talking about Hazley being the guy, and he might go after that job and put on a show this spring.
All right, sounds good, Jim. Glad you made it. We'll talk to you.
My pleasure, Mike. Have a great day.
All right, there he is, Jim Salisbury, Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Well, Salisbury pulling for Roman Quinn over your boy Hazy.
Yeah, I'm not concerned.
You like that?
No, I mean, I'm not.
You got a little frown on your face when you said that.
It bothers me, but I'm not concerned. I do want him to play well, but with him, I believe he can stay healthy for a month when he does it. So, sure, he wins it.
Well, listen, there are two things that my hunch tells me. That you're right that he'll never be healthy enough to be a regular player.
Yeah.
But number two is this Dominguez thing scares me.
Yes, I agree.
Because he didn't get the surgery, it scares me.
Had he gotten it, you at least have a time frame of when he's back. There's tons of guys that have come back from that.
I don't like the let's rehab it and see what happens situation.
That means but more Daenerys.
Just me.
More Daenerys in the night.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going down there and we'll see what for ourselves. Let's go back to the phones, talk to Art in Havertown. Art, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Art?
Hi, Mike. A couple points about the Sixers. The thing is, it's a maturity thing with Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
These players that come out of college early, they might be physically capable of playing in the NBA, but mentally and emotionally, they are not. He wants to be a celebrity. Same thing a little bit with Simmons, although I'm sort of on board with Simmons lately. He's a different player when Embiid's not in the game. They're all different when Embiid's not in the game. They seem to go to spots. They seem to open up the floor. They seem to play more of into a flow when Embiid's not bogging down. Yeah, I know they're better with Embiid, but I think if they trade him in the offseason and get two solid players that can get up and down the floor, the NBA is leaning towards that big, cumbersome center.
No, you're right. You're right about that, and that may happen that they decide that. I don't think it will, but I'm not even concerned. I can't even look at that. I can't even look at the off season. I'm worried about whether this team can get to the Eastern Conference Final. I keep saying it, but that's the only thing I'm concerned about. And my other question to you is this: maturity. He's 25 now. Yeah, enough with the maturity. Like these guys are immature. He's 25. How long is it going to take for you to be mature?
Well, then that's who he is. That's my point. He's not going to be. He's more about the celebrity. And I got two more things.
Yes.
The thing about Cunningham taking over for Gene Shue and winning the title, he didn't win the title till this little guy named Moses Malone came to town.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. People have a tendency to forget the circumstances. They think Billy magically appeared and they won. They didn't. It was frustrating. Because they're slamming along with the Harvey Catchings and the what's the big dude that they traded before they got Moses? No, Caldwell Jones, Sewell.
Yeah,
and they realized that wasn't going to get done.
So they added the reigning league MVP, and then he comes in, gets another league MVP and a title. Like, think about that. Now imagine if the Sixers going into next year can get the Greek Freak. Like the reigning MVP. Then all of a sudden, Brett Brown would look like a great coach.
Who did the Sixers trade to get Moses Malone?
I thought there was a weird thing. Didn't it involve money, too?
I think they had to move some people that Houston had to take somebody. I can't remember what that trade was. No. Two open lines. 610-620-9975. Let's get Ron and Ivy Lane in here. Ron, what's up?
Yeah. How you doing, Mike?
Is it Ivy Land?
Yes.
Oh, you're in Ivy Land. Okay. Ivy Lane.
No, not Ivy Lane.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Listen, I have a neighbor of mine who has full season Sixers tickets that he's had for 5 years or so, and he'll take me down to about five or six games a year and all of that stuff, so that's nice. But he called me today, and he said, and I don't know if you heard anything about this, that Embiid and Simmons are not getting along in the locker room.
Yeah, that's been out there for a while.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's some friction because I think Embiid is frustrated with Ben Simmons and what Ben doesn't do on the floor, which forces him to be in spots that maybe he doesn't want to be in.
Do you think because of this, there might be a trade of one of them?
I have no idea. To me, everything's on the table if they lose in the first round. Okay. If that doesn't happen, no.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I just heard that for the first time today.
Yeah, that's been whispered for a while.
Okay. All right.
All righty.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, it was Caldwell Jones, the number one pick. They got, because they had to get a center in return. So they got Sewell, and number one pick turned out to be Roddy McRae, who played many years there. What?
Sixers still won the trade.
Oh, of course they won the trade. They got a championship out of it.
Should have got another one, but that's a whole nother.
Yeah. Okay, Roland in Cape May. You're on 97.5 FDAG. Roland.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, Roland?
Hey, listen, I have to tell you, my wife and I watched the Philly feud on Saturday night. You and Natalie did a bang-up job.
Oh, thank you. Which one was on Saturday? Oh, it's the Brewers.
Yeah, oh, okay. I think it was the Brewer episode.
The Brewer episode, where the breweries people.
Yeah, you got to get Tyrone to get one of those referee outfits on the other end, so you have bookends with Natalie and him.
Yeah, I don't think Ty would be interested in that gig. Would you be interested, Ty?
Sure.
You would?
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well add another TV show to your resume. Well, plus he had a sport coat on. I'm watching this weekend. He had it all. He flashed the sport coat.
It was so good.
What is that show called?
It had to be on the
Betcast.
I was filling in for Anthony.
I was just
filling
in.
Fire on TV. All time.
Anyway, go ahead, Roland. We'll talk about that in a second.
I have a question to ask you. I'm in agreement with you. They don't get out in the first round. Somebody's got to go, if not more than one.
Well, the coach is gone.
Yeah.
Now, it's a matter of whether they think a new coach will, and they probably would side. They wouldn't go radical. The coach would be gone. Another coach would be chosen to blend the two.
Listen, this is my idea, okay? You tell me what you think of this. Okay, so we fire the coach. We don't get out in the first round. We fire the coach, and Brandt comes down. Elk comes down and coaches the team.
No.
No?
No.
He wouldn't have any influence over Embiid?
He has no interest in coaching. He's an executive now. Why would he want to coach?
Jay Wright. Was Jay Wright ready? Would he come up?
Who knows? I mean, I don't think he would, because he's got a nice situation now. If he wanted to be an NBA coach, you know, I guess maybe he would listen to the Sixers. It makes sense. But I'm not so sure. I mean, he's making $6 million now. With a cushy life. The only thing about Jay is his kids are grown now, so it would be a matter of him traveling away from his wife, who's an empty nester. Now think about that for a second.
Yeah.
You know, I because a lot of people, well, since his kids are grown, then that would, you know, why wouldn't he take a shot? But the other side of it is, well, now you're abandoning your wife, who's now at the home alone. Like, the kids aren't around anymore. You know, so I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, he turned down 10 from the Knicks before he got his latest raise. So it's not money. You get what I'm saying?
Well, like, but the Sixer thing would be, like, the New York thing would be, you know. The Sixer thing would, he'd get a little more leeway here.
Yes, but immense pressure. Because there's a lot of people that think, oh, you hire Jay Wright, they win a title. Like, there's a lot of fans that would expect title year one.
There is. It all depends on what he thinks is a challenge. Now, like, coaching Villanova forever, is that enough of a challenge for the guy? It might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
He's been there a while now. How long has he been there now?
I bet him on Sunday and took a frying pan in the face on a money line.
Yeah.
Money line straight.
Yeah, he got bit by that one.
Bad weekend for me. 610-632-0975. On the other side, talk a little bit about stand-up comedy, which Tyrone used to dabble in. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
311? Oh, my.
Amber is the color of energy. It's 4:30. It's time to update the Twitter poll. Now, are you 311 person?
I listen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like love them.
How about Incubus?
I like Incubus.
Yeah, I too.
Yeah.
Incubus 311. Mike, this might have to make an appearance.
There you go.
All right, go ahead, Nat. What's the Twitter poll say?
Today's poll, over 1,500 votes on it. Do you believe Cork Moz is real? 65% say yes, 35% say no.
All righty, 65, holding fast.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was telling you about earlier in the show how I was bored on Sunday. Nothing sports-wise. I mean, I'm just ripping around. Like, the golf channel, because it was the early part of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And I was like, I don't want to see golf this early. So I stumble, HBO Comedy Channel. Boom. Chris Rock in a stand-up I hadn't seen before. And it's called Bigger and Blacker.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's like Eddie Murphy-esque.
It's fantastic.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's really well done and brilliant. And that dude, Eddie, take a little break and pause. My man is relentless, Chris Rock.
That was him at his peak. It was the late 90s, yeah, early 2000s.
1999, I think it was.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
He was so good.
In fact, I bought the album off of that. That's where the drop comes from.
He
did companion songs and stuff and videos. That's where this came from. And he had like a fake tie. He dressed up as Tiger
Woods. Oh my God, that was so
funny. In the video with the champagne. It was like, he was just in such a level at that time.
It was
as good as anybody.
Now, I am not a big stand-up. Like, I won't go to comedy clubs.
Right.
But for some reason, I'm driving around a car. I go, I need something to, laugh at. So I put on the satellite. There's a bunch of comedy channels on satellite radio. I go to Netflix. Netflix is something. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy channel. They play the routines of Netflix. And also, I'm hearing all these females that are funny. I go, man. What does the guy do? As soon as he hears a funny female.
You Google her.
Right. Mm-hmm. You want to see what she looks like.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Right? So all of a sudden, I like this treasure trove of attractive young female comedians pop up.
Yes.
And who knew?
And yeah. Everybody.
First of all, I'm a big
except for you.
Nikki Glaser fan, right? I saw her in a roast.
Shocking.
But then there's Eliza Schlesinger.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yes, funny.
And there's
so funny.
Catherine Ryan.
Funny.
And they're fairly hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's still a visual medium more than anything. And now that women are able to get,
I was going
to
say, now that they're getting stage time, so this is what comes of women having opportunities.
The audience decides.
All right, that's fine. Women have time. I'm all for that.
No, but I'm just saying that's why you're hearing more of them now.
The influx
right, but
is
that's not where I'm going with this.
All right.
Where I'm going with this is sort of in a hypothetical man way.
Oh, here we go.
The hypothetical man, is the hypothetical man secure enough to be with a stand-up comic? Because a lot of routines, they're talking about guys that aren't secure enough in their life to be with a stand-up comic. You would say no?
Most men are not, for two reasons. One, men, even unfunny men I've learned, really think they're funny, and they get off on their significant other laughing at their jokes or people laughing at their jokes. And
it's a control thing for a man, and a woman can't be funnier than a man?
I know for a fact it can bother certain men when their girlfriend's funnier or wittier than they are. So that's one facet of it. The other part is they spend a lot of time late nights in clubs with all dudes, because still the majority of stand-up comics are dudes. So if you date a stand-up comedian that's serious, she's out late with males 6 out of 7 nights a week working on material.
Yeah.
Even when they're big. It's still mostly males. And do you feel comfortable if you're somewhere else working a regular job and she's out with 27 guys?
That's why a lot of comedians date and marry other comedians.
Yep.
Because the business side of that is so intense.
I'm just trying to think whether I would. Because I have a news for you. I would not be affected if somebody was smarter than me.
No, you wouldn't be.
Why? even though I haven't found that yet. But why? No, I'm just kidding. Why would I care that the woman I'm with is funnier than me? Because that would be one of the things that would be attracted to me. For her, to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be attracted to somebody who could be really funny.
You would be. I've seen guys almost cower in a crowd. If their girl is kind of owning the crowd. Uh-huh. Some of them look at it with a... There are men that look at it with a sense of pride. Huh. And I've seen it where the guy tries to almost keep up. Well, she's better. She's a comedian. And they can't keep up. And they almost cower. I can see the shoulders. And I've seen it. Hmm. Up close.
That's interesting.
There's still the stereotypical guy who wants their women barefoot and pregnant. That's still out there.
Yeah.
They don't want a girl who's out there out-dueling him at a party.
But I mean, it is 2020.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's still guys that have a different level of control. They don't literally want, okay, now they say, okay, well, you can work, but my job comes first. My career, that's still out there. All that stuff's still there. They just, it's not necessarily in that still severe way. You've always had a more open mind than other people. Even the fact that you like cooking. You know how many guys in your generation would never cook?
Right.
Just that. The fact that you would cook for the family versus that's, you always were more evolved than your, there's still a lot of guys.
I'm trying to picture it. Like, I would picture, like, me as, like, an editor. Like, if she would run a joke by me, what do you think of this joke? No, I don't think that would work. But I wouldn't be threatened by it.
But you were confident.
Right, but yeah.
I was like, that's damn funny. Right. And I would travel, so she wouldn't be hanging out with 25 dudes, or I'd be with it.
But if you had a job, you'd have to go to work. Not most, that's what she said. Like, if you work, if she's dating a guy who has a regular job, and she's not rich yet, that's her job, she's traveling, but she's not enough to bankroll both of them. He's an accountant.
All right, I guess it's tax season.
He gotta go to work.
Don't count the comedians out, Mike.
They all have stories of bad relationships.
Yep.
In their routines.
Yeah.
Now a lot of it's fake. So like this Mrs. Maisel situation, mm-hmm. right? This show.
Yeah.
Where the guy was threatened that she was going to talk about the family life in a humorous way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that was in 1959, we're setting for this Mrs. Maisel thing. I can't imagine it would be that today.
You look around at those female comedians, Google all of them, find how many.
You'd be surprised at the intimidation factor.
Mm-hmm. And check how many of them are married.
They also talk a lot about sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's all fake. I think that's just done for effect.
I don't think
that they have as much sex as they're talking about.
Oh, maybe not. It might be exaggerated, but I don't think it's all fake.
The sex part of it in their routines is exaggerated.
Well, and they also kind of...
They make themselves out to be, like, sexual maniacs.
Well, they all kind of... Well, it also is, like, a narrative that comes with, like, when you're putting together a comedy routine. Like, you have kind of areas that you go to, and then I guess when you're writing your material, you kind of embellish...
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah, okay.
So it's for dramatic... It's for the effect.
Yeah. It was one of the things that
to send it home.
Hurt my comedy career.
All right, so first of all, when I looked at that Chris Rock thing, I'm thinking that that's the style you would have had.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So was Chris Rock an influence? And you getting into stand-up, was Chris Rock an influence?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah, he was...
Was he the influence in your time?
Martin Lawrence was the influence.
Martin Lawrence was. Okay. All right.
He was up there, Chris Tucker, because he was so young. Like, Chris Tucker was
all hysterical.
Chris Tucker
and Martin Lawrence was especially hysterical. Right.
But he was on Def Comedy Jam when he was 19 years old, Chris Tucker was.
Uh-huh.
Like, they couldn't believe it. And he had a whole routine, like, doing the whole Michael Jackson. Like, he was 19 years old. So those people.
All right. So that would be your style. Chris Rock is bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, less profanity, though.
Okay.
Than him. No, the reason is I don't want all my curses to count. So I would be very careful.
I got you.
To pick my spot so that when I drop one, it was like, whoa. I wasn't Bill Cosby either. It was like, but I
hear you.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry to eat up that time, but I just want to throw that in because I texted Tyrone. I said, have you seen this Chris Rock thing? It was like, I go, this is like Eddie Murphy Raw. I'm
pretty sure it won the Emmy.
That one did?
I'm pretty sure
it did.
Yeah,
I think he did.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. Mike Missinelli Show. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, so 447, Mike Mazzelli Show. There is one line open, and we're going to get to the phones right away. So let's get to them. Jeremy and Cherry Hill, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeremy.
Hi, Mike.
What's up, Jeremy?
Our long-time listener.
How you doing?
I wanted to talk about the Sixers.
Yes, sir.
I had 2 points. First, I know we've been kind of beating a dead horse here about this, but Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons being on the floor at the same time, I don't think they can coexist. I think Coach Brett Brown needs to find a way to find some more offensive fluidity when they're both on the floor separately.
Well, I agree with you, but it's not separately that counts at this point. The only way you're going to win is to have them both on the floor. So, you know, I understand that they may look with more fluidity when they're not on the floor together, but they have to be on the floor together.
Okay. And what do you feel about...
Don't you think so? I mean, the only way they're going to win is to have both their star players on the floor.
Yeah, but I feel like when you need points fast, Simmons needs to have the ball, and you can't have him be clogging the lane.
And see, this clogging the lane thing, I don't get. I think it's highly overrated. But, you know, like, what does clogging the lane mean? You mean, does that mean he can't step aside? Like, does he have to stay in the lane if Simmons goes to the basket? This is the thing I don't get about this clogging the lane. I see it as the structure of it sounds like, well, he's clogging up the lane. He's 7 foot, blah, 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 and there's no room for Ben. Well, what did centers do in the past? They moved aside. And you know what happens? When the defenders go to attack the guy attacking the basket, you get a quick little dish off for a guy who's in like a dunker spot. Like, why can't Embiid be not clogging the lane, but still be low?
Right. And what I'm seeing now is they're putting Embiid out on the free line when you have Simmons running up the floor. And then they're just dishing the ball out into Embiid. Now he's...
Yeah, because Brett is... he loves the dribble, drive, dish, kick out thing. But like this concept that they can't play together has to be solved by a head coach. And B does not have to be... First of all, there's 3 seconds. Second of all, like, he's not like a cement post in the lane where Ben can't get to the basket. Like, basketball players have to be fluid and flexible, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
And my second point was, do you feel Korkmaz earned his way into the starting lineup?
No, I think Josh Richardson is going to be the starter. They're just like biding time for him to get healthier. They're not going to start Korkmaz ahead of Josh Richardson, do you think?
We'll see if he starts scoring.
They're not going to start Korkmaz if Josh Richardson is 100%. Because their defensive presence early on has to be what fuels them.
They're not even going to start him if Shake Milton plays, because all the success has been off the bench. They're not going to change that role.
Yeah, there's no reason to think that. Why would he be, like, why would they start him?
Yeah, even Shake Milton will start him from. They're not going to start Korkmaz unless it's an emergency. Alec Burks will start before.
It's like two games and like where he scored 30. And God bless him, and it's just substantial. But all of a sudden, we get so carried away with, oh, my God, he's got to be... Does he have to start now? It's two games against Memphis and freaking Chicago. Relax with this.
No, he doesn't have to start.
We're so overreactive. It's unbelievable sometimes. He needs to whine in the freaking rack for a little bit. Zachary, Virginia. Zach, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Zach.
Guys, how we doing?
What's going on, Zachary?
Oh my God! Yeah, this Sixers team, man. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Mike. I really, I think, like you said, there's so much of this pseudo lingo, clogging the lane, no space,
can't play together. Joel Embiid can't move. He can't. He's stuck in the mud and quicksand right there in the middle of the lane, and he can't get to the basket.
You know, and people say, oh, you know, well, they're not better with you know, Joel Embiid, you know, sometimes they look, you know, that he has to play. You know, listen, this team, if they remove him, this team was built around Joel. You can't just pull him out and win a couple games and say, this team's better without Joel Embiid. It doesn't work.
No, they have to be on the floor together. Right. So you exactly. It's up to the coach to figure it out. You can't be going. Right. You can't concede to it and say, "Well, we can only play one of them at a time." Well, exactly. Guess what? Again, in the playoffs in a 7-game series, you're gonna have a guy on a bench.
Yeah, and that's the other. You know, Brett Brown. Obviously, I think even a second round. That would be 3 years in a row. He's gone.
Well, you're right. He would be on shaky footing even in the second round. I agree with you.
Secondly, you know, his whole – I love Brett. I like Brett Brown. You know, I think he's a good coach. You know, I think he does have a couple players that – I think Ben has a big ego. The whole maturity is nonsense. You know, I got a 25-year-old friend who's a professional. He's made his life around his work. You know, the idea they're built for the playoffs to me is nonsense. Okay, you just played the Bucks. And you lost. You, the team you're trying to go up against, oh, well, we need to beat the Bucks. You just played them, and you lost. You know, and you didn't just lose. You lost four games on the road. And what playoff scenario are you going to play four straight home games? You know, so, the idea, unfortunately, they're grandfathered in to big contracts. They have to start Al Horford, even if common sense would say, you know, maybe start Shake instead of him, you know, assuming Josh Richardson is back.
Yeah, but you can't do that, you see, because you can't small up your lineup.
Well,
they don't have a guy that can start at the four. They don't.
They don't, no.
So, like, this, well, start so-and-so. All right, you want to make you just want to play with three perimeter players, and you make Tobias Harris a four where he's mismatched. It messes up the whole thing. The Al Horford thing is ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it.
Last night was the first time in his career he went scoreless.
Yeah, he's just so disengaged. It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me other than he just has no desire to want to be here. I can't explain it any other way. So, all right, it's time for a break. Like in the old days, Tyrone, when they actually had legitimate post players, I assume guards couldn't drive to the basket and score.
No, they did.
All right. Well, right? I get the whole premise that he can. But to me, like, Embiid can still be there, slide outside the foul lane, Ben attacks, the defensive attention goes to Ben. It's a dish off.
And the numbers don't back it up either this season without Embiid. Their offense is worse this season when Embiid doesn't play than when it does. Everybody gets excited because Ben gets more dunks. The offense as a whole goes from 20th, which isn't good, to 29th, which is worse.
It can't be this hard for a coach to design something where he takes advantage of a guard attacking the basket, but also has his low post guy down where he can be in a scoring spot. I just don't understand it. 5 o'clock hour is ahead. Two open lines, 610-620-0975, back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.